Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
In the waning days left in the legislative session, the atmosphere is intensifying at the state capitol. Democrats who lead the legislature are facing pressure from all sides to deliver on legislation that they campaigned on. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
Governor Andrew Cuomo began the week with a news conference about measures focusing on four women's issues that he says need to be done before the session ends. The governor is seeking passage of an equal rights amendment for women in the state's constitution, strengthening the state's anti-sexual harassment laws, and extending the state's statute of limitations for reporting some rape crimes, which are among the shortest time limit in the nation. And the governor wants to mandate that women in New York receive equal pay for equal work. The measures are even more important, he says, now that the federal government, led by President Trump, is moving to take away women's rights.
New York should set the national standard for women's rights.
Spokespersons for the Democratic-led Senate and Assembly say they do not oppose any of the bills. But Cuomo says he won't be assured of the legislators' support until they actually vote on the measures. And the governor, who has had an antagonistic relationship at times with the left of his party, says lawmakers who say they are progressive cannot claim that title unless they act on the measures.
Progressive is not a lapel pin. Progressive is not a word that you can use to define yourself in a political campaign. Progressive is what you did and what you do and what you accomplish. You want to be a progressive? Achieve progressive results.
At the news conference, Cuomo confirmed that one item pushed by progressive groups, the legalization of marijuana for adult recreational use, is not likely to happen this session. Both the governor and the Senate sponsor of the bill say the Senate does not currently have the votes to pass it. Cuomo, who has intervened with lawmakers in the past to get key items like gay marriage and gun control approved, says this time, though, he does not think his influence would help.
I don't think it is feasible at this point. I don't think it matters how much I push in 11 days. I think when the Senate says we don't have the votes, I take them at the word.
Despite that, Cuomo says cannabis legalization remains one of his top 10 priorities for the end of the session. Those remarks angered pro-legalization groups who say they are looking for leadership in state government. Stanley Fritz with Citizen Action says he's disappointed.
The governor said at the beginning of session that he had a 100-day plan for marijuana legalization. Well, we're past 100 days. You can't just say you're going to do that then decide to fall off because, you know, the wind blew left today.
Cassandra Frederick with the Drug Policy Alliance says it's not just the governor who is at fault. She says Democratic leaders in the Senate and Assembly haven't done enough either.
The issues that we're putting to the forefront right now are not a suggestion. They are a demand from our communities that we have waited for a very long time for this progressive blue wave, and we expect results.
The group say they plan several days of intense lobbying at the Capitol between now and the end of the session. They also want New York City's rent laws renewed, strengthened, and expanded to other parts of the state, an end to solitary confinement in the state's prisons, and action to combat climate change. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Whoa, what a week in Albany, Alan. I believe it was 61 people were arrested in quite the protest. It was outside the Assembly and the Senate offices as well as the governor's offices. Pro-tenant groups were in town. They're really up in arms over the issue of rent control.
David, you and I have been around for a long time. We've been watching state politics. There are days I think there are only 500 people in the state who really care about legislative politics. Nevertheless, when it comes to how much rent you pay for your home and whether you have rent protection, that is something that hits people right in the gut. And they were here, and they were sitting outside the governor's office, and they were rapping on the glass doors, and they were adamant because they just can't afford it. I don't know if I've ever told you this, David, but I have two very good friends. They were both college professors. They both left their jobs because with rent decontrol, if you make a certain amount of money, you lose your apartment, or the landlord is allowed to really jack up the rent. We had a candidate who said the rent is too damn high, and it is. For a one-bedroom apartment, I just read in the newspaper, it's almost $3,000 a month. That's a lot of money. 3 times 12, that's a lot of money. And then there's the question of whether or not those protections ought to be extended for the rest of the state. And now you have Democrats controlling both houses of Congress. In the old days, the Republicans would basically side more with the landlords. But now it's anybody's guess as to what's going to happen. Governor Cuomo knew this was coming. He knew that if the Democrats took the Senate, that there would be a loss of an anchor in terms of keeping things stable. And he's now forced to basically take a much more moderate position than some of the people in the state Senate and Assembly. And that is going to hurt him, no question.
Well, it started out on a fast track with a push to legalize recreational use of marijuana. And now we hear this week from the governor that it looks like this is not going to happen now. He's already attacked, especially the Senate, and the issue of passing progressive legislation.
Hey, David, I live in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and I must say we already have one operating pot shop in a town which has 7,000 regular residents. We're soon to have 5. I was kidding around with the governor. I said, you got to do something because, you know, our town is just filled with people coming in looking for pot. Many of them have New York State license plates, I'll tell you that. Of course, I was kidding about it. But the revenue is all going to Massachusetts, to the state and to the towns. I wrote a column recently in which I scratched my head and I said, you know what? I don't really think this guy Cuomo is for recreational marijuana. How do I know that? Because he said it to me, and he said it to all of us a while back. He said it was a gateway drug. He said he didn't like it. And then when he got into a primary with more progressive candidates, all of a sudden he switched. But did he? I suspect not. Because the people in the legislature were trying to pass a marijuana bill, and no matter what they said, somehow it didn't come together with the governor. Did he really want recreational or any other kind of marijuana? I have my doubts.
Still a bit away, but of course the governor recently told you he's going to run for a fourth term.
Made a lot of news right here on WMC doing that.
Many have said it's going to be an easy push. Will it be?
Well, our friend Chris Churchill, who is on our panel quite frequently and who is a great columnist for the Times Union, thinks it will be easy. That you can't name a single candidate right now who could give him a run for his money. We saw that. New York City has more people than upstate New York, and, you know, when they're pro-Cuomo, and it would appear that he has some leeway. However, you know, his father lost when he ran for a fourth term, and he was extraordinarily popular because it was a very Republican year that he lost it. And I don't think that's going to happen quite yet, not with Donald Trump in the White House. So if you, David, have anybody's name on your lips who could give him a run for his money, I'd like to know what it is, because I think Churchill was right. I don't see it.
You think Molinaro would put his hat in again?
Look, you know, hope springs eternal for a lot of people. They lose, and then they say, if this had happened, if that happened, maybe I would have won. And their relatives say, you could do it. Hey, look, a non-entity like George Pataki beat Mario Cuomo. As I have often said to you and everybody else, David, who he? But he won, and he won for 3 terms.
Legislative Gazette political observer, Alan Chartok.
Thanks for all you do, David.
Thank you, Alan. Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The New York State Department of Environmental Conservation has deemed an Orange County power plant's air permit applications complete. A public comment period has begun. Opponents of the plant say the CPV plant should never have been allowed to operate in the first place. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn with more.
The DEC on Wednesday released the draft permits for a 45-day public comment period. A DEC spokesperson says the agency has conducted its initial review of Competitive Power Ventures Valley Energy Center's Title V and Title IV air permit applications and determined that these applications are complete and that the draft permits are ready for public notice and comment. First-term New York State Senator Jen Metzger of the 42nd District, a Democrat, says she remains deeply concerned about the 680-megawatt natural gas power plant that has been operational since fall of 2018.
The application being complete and the application being accepted are two different things. And it's important. I see this as a really important opportunity now that it is complete to get more public input into this project.
DEC staff in August denied CPV's request to renew its air state facility permit, citing the permit had failed to meet current regulatory requirements, and held two same-day public hearings in Goshen on the denial. Now, in addition to the public comment period, DEC will hold a public hearing, which longtime CPV plant opponent and Protect Orange County Chair Pramila Malik hopes is near the way onto plant.
Yeah, we absolutely insist on the city of Middletown for a location for a public hearing because that is where the highest density of impacted residents live. And the last public hearing that the DEC held was in Goshen. It was extremely difficult for impacted residents to get there. There is no public transportation there.
DEC has not yet decided on a date or location. Tom Rumsey is Senior Vice President for External Affairs for CPV. In a statement, he says, quote, "As the regulatory process moves forward, we will continue to work with regulators and policymakers at every level of government and take great pride in the role we play lowering emissions, improving reliability, and helping New York meet its green energy goals," end quote. Again, Metzger.
This continues to be, a huge concern in our district. And, you know, we did do this health impact study. We had nearly 80 respondents reporting various health problems that could be associated with the power plant. We're very concerned about that. We've shared that data with the DEC commissioner and the commissioner of health, and we'll be submitting it as part of the formal record during the hearing as well.
She says the most frequent issues reported were chronic headaches and cough. Malik, who ran against Metzger in the Democratic primary for Senate, says her group did its own study documenting more than double the number in Metzger's study of sick people. Malik wants the State Department of Health to conduct a health impact assessment. In a joint response, DEC and DOH say they are reviewing the survey data collected by a local group as well as from Metzger's office and say community members may direct their health concerns to the department. Again, Malik.
This power plant should never have been allowed to operate in the first place. They should never have received a single permit. So we will once again engage the process and hope that our regulatory officials and political leaders do the right thing this time for the people of Orange County and for the planet.
DEC's written comment period closes July 12th.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
Time appears to be running out for some residents in Greene County, New York, who had hoped to stop construction of a new jail. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas has an update.
The Greene County Legislature gave the green light for a new jail to be built in Coxsackie. Legislature Chair Patrick Linger is a Republican.
As of Wednesday night, we held a special meeting to get back responses that we had requested from the state leadership, to include the Assembly, the Senate, and the governor's office. We did not receive anything back in writing as to whether there was going to be any legislation pushed through those bodies to allow shared or regional jails. And as a result of that, the legislature decided that we would move forward with the resolutions that we've already passed, which include the bonding as well as the bid awards from the competitive bids that came in that we've already approved. So right now, we are going to move forward on those two resolutions.
Republican State Senator George Amador of the 46th District represents Greene County.
In my office, we have a policy of responding to home rule, and that's what I have done throughout the entire process here. We never received a request from Greene County Legislature to carry this bill. They reached out to the governor's office and the legislative leaders to weigh in on this issue. And to my knowledge, they didn't get even a response, nor did I. A statewide bill has passed in the Senate numerous times in the past, which I have supported. And it has always been held up in the New York State Assembly.
A bill introduced by Brooklyn Democratic Assemblyman Joseph Lenthal intending to clarify the state's position on shared jails is moving through committees so slowly that groundbreaking for the jail is now almost a given. Activists fear when construction begins, costs will rise. Wayne Sheridan heads the Greene County Taxpayers Association.
Some people say it could be as much as $90 million. Which is the biggest capital expense ever in Greene County. And it will raise taxes, again, people we trust, say 16 to 20% each year for the next 30 years.
Linger says Wednesday's vote shows that not all taxpayers are on the same page as Sheridan and his group.
The majority voted to continue on with what we'd already approved. There was actually no dissenting opinion as far as moving forward with what we've approved.
Linger says final written permits are expected soon from the State Department of Environmental Conservation.
What we approved was a $39 million bond resolution plus an $8 million cash influx to come up with a total of the $47.1 million low competitive bids that we awarded. Those awards, I believe, were going to reduce again our bed count. We do hope to have somewhat of a reduction in the neighborhood of $3 to $3.5 million from what was approved. And I believe our pre-construction meeting is scheduled for next Tuesday with the contractors. We'll go from there. We're still waiting on a couple of permits that we've been told are ready to be issued, but I don't have them in hand yet.
The state legislative session ends June 19th.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The North Country Chamber of Commerce recently hosted a Quebec-New York aerospace training equipment rendezvous in Plattsburgh. The event brought together representatives from industry and government, including New York Congresswoman Elise Stefanik. The Republican co-chair of the Congressional Northern Border Caucus was one of the keynote speakers. Afterward, the 21st District Representative sat down with WAMC's North Country Bureau Chief Pat Bradley to discuss a number of issues.
In Canada this week, they are taking a very hard look at social media platforms like Facebook and Twitter. Should there be restrictions placed on the social media platforms?
I think the social media platforms have a significant part to play in this. We had the technology companies testify in an open hearing on the Intelligence Committee about the investments they're making when it comes to their security practices, how they approve political ads, and they have made robust investments in that space. There are still significant questions that I think we need to ask those tech companies to make sure that they are doing enough. So I support making sure that we hold the tech companies accountable and they're making those investments and understand the importance of election security.
As we look towards the 2020 election, once again, very early on, you have already a challenger. What do you make of challengers stepping up so early in the process, not just in your campaign, but across many other districts and states?
I'm looking forward to the 2020 elections. I was proud to win by the largest margin in the entire Northeast of any Republican in 2018. That was a tough election cycle for all House Republicans, and I think the outcome in this district really speaks for itself. We won by significant double digits. We're in a very strong position going into 2020. I'm looking forward to once again talking about the differences. I'm focused on results. My far-left opponent is focused on resistance. She opposes everything the president does. She is for raising taxes. She is for banning guns. I have a strong record of being an independent voice for this district, and I look forward to continuing to do my job like I am today in terms of highlighting issues that are important to constituents and businesses that I represent.
Some people have a negative view of what is going on down in Washington. Are you worried that that will impact your campaign as an incumbent?
Well, you know, I get frustrated with what's going on in Washington. I think every American's pretty frustrated, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, about what's going on in Washington. What I'm very proud of is I'm in the top 10% most bipartisan members of Congress, and I have a record of delivering results for my constituents, whether it's being the key voice for Fort Drum, whether it's advocating on U.S.-Canadian issues, northern border issues, focusing on representing farmers and helping pass the Farm Bill, which passed after the last election, and that was a big victory for our region. So I'm proud of my record, and I'm going to run on my strong record in 2020.
Elise Stefanik, you are in Plattsburgh for a new meeting regarding the cross-border relationship, and that's taking a look at the aerospace potential. We've got other transportation manufacturing going on. What do you see as the potential for aerospace development based on especially what's going on in Montreal?
I think there's huge potential for businesses to be attracted to make increased investments in the broader Plattsburgh and Clinton County region. We're seeing examples of that with companies like Norsk Titanium, which is continuing to grow. I was able to host a senior-level Department of Defense delegation to make sure that they understood the capabilities of Norsk Titanium and to try to identify opportunities where Norsk can partner with the Department of Defense. I think similar to what the region has done when it comes to the transportation parts manufacturing sector in partnership with Montreal, we should also be looking, and I know the North Country Chamber is looking at those partnership opportunities when it comes to aerospace. So again, I think you'll see growth when it comes to aerospace jobs and businesses in our region.
Republican Elise Stefanik is in her third term representing New York's 21st District. So far, she is being challenged in 2020 by Democrat Tedra Cobb, who lost to Stefanik in 2018.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
Well, the city of Albany has unveiled a new crosswalk painted with the Rainbow Pride flag in recognition of Pride Month. Jesse King was there.
The crosswalk bridges two long-standing gay bars on Central Avenue, Rocks and the Waterworks Pub, as a small gesture of support for the LGBTQ community. At the fixture's debut on Thursday, Tantra Legrone of In Our Own Voices, an organization dedicated to assisting LGBTQ people of color, could barely contain her excitement.
As a little girl, this would have meant so much to me, seeing that flag that represents diversity here in the city of Albany, and to be able to walk through the world and knowing that I am supported means a lot.
The new painting will be a permanent addition to Central Avenue, part of an ongoing mural and public art project by the city and parking authority. But Rock's owner, Lance Ryder, says the crosswalk is something he and Waterworks Pub general manager Scott Levine have been wanting to do for years as a way of publicly making space for the LGBTQ community.
In many places across the country, they have what they call a gay neighborhood, where there's kind of that area that is infused with a lot of gay-owned and operated businesses. And we're sort of that here, and we want people to have that place to go.
Ultimately, it was Mayor Kathy Sheehan and Common Councilor Richard Conte who got the ball rolling ahead of Pride Month, June. Conte says this Pride Month is especially important. It marks the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall Riots, which are largely credited with sparking the fight for equal rights for LGBTQ people. Conti says the country and Albany have come a long way since 1969.
Thinking back in the history of the gay and lesbian community here in Albany, it was just 31 years ago this past March that the Albany Common Council actually voted down a basic human rights ordinance for the community. It was only a few years before that that I remember that there was actually a police raid on a gay establishment here on Central Avenue. I forget exactly where it was, but we've come a long way.
In Our Own Voices, Tandra LeGrone says there's still a long way to go. Transgender people around the country, especially transgender people of color, face continued violence and oppression.
I think a lot of folks like to look at the LGBT community as one big umbrella, but there's diversity in any community. So as black and brown people, we experience racism, discrimination, oppression, and marginalization on a daily basis.
LeGrone adds she's found Albany to be extremely welcoming and a model for other communities. Reflecting on her recent trip to Israel with the U.S. Conference of Mayors, Mayor Sheehan praised the crosswalk and other murals around the city for highlighting its diversity.
We had conversations as mayors about the lack of welcoming and the language of divisiveness that we see on the national and international level. And what we talked about as mayors, Democrat and Republican, is that it's our job to make sure that our cities speak up.
Albany isn't the only city painting its streets in the name of pride. Kingston is repainting some of its uptown crosswalks. Albany's Washington Park will host a Black and Latino Pride celebration on June 8th, followed by the Capitol Pride Parade and Festival on June 9th. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Jesse King.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1923. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.